Good morning, afternoon, and evening, and welcome to the 8311 Cast, your premier Midwestern-based sports podcast, bringing you all things sports to your beautiful ears. Join your hosts, Kyle Mersch, Mike Ludwig, Ari Amberi, and Wyatt Teeter, as we talk about college basketball, the NBA, and of course, our signature segments, Mike's Stupid Rules and Write That Down Predictions, here on episode 259. We'll talk about how good the men's basketball team is here in a minute, but I do have a pop quiz for you three. What is the highest the Iowa State men's basketball team has ever ranked in the history of the AP poll, dating back to 1955, I believe is the latest this goes back?
I'm going to guess number 4. I know we've made it to number 6.
I was going to guess 2.
I'll just guess 6 because we're there right now. Why not?
It is not 6. We have been in the 5th spot before, dating back to 96, and the 4th spot also back in 96. I did find one and only one week where we were ranked number 3, dating back to January 21st, 1957, week 7 of the basketball season. We were down to number 3. Immediately the next week, we must have done something bad because we got punted back to number 8, but number 3 is the highest that I can find that the Iowa State men's basketball team has ever placed in the AP poll.
That's crazy.
Wild.
That's high.
It's such an outlier. If you look at this week, they started at 17, then 14, 14, 7. So from 14 down to 7th, up to 9th, and then immediately down to 3 and then back up to 8. So I don't know what they did between week 6 and week 7 that year, but it must have been amazing to go from the number 9 spot to the number 3 spot.
Yeah,
that's a pretty big jump. You don't see movement that much at the top of the poll. And I mean, you saw that this week with Purdue losing and getting knocked down, one spot, losing to an unranked team. Mm-hmm. It's just hard to move around the top of the poll in general.
I was surprised at how much they moved Iowa State up. I thought we were going to be number 8.
I think I guessed maybe 6 or 8. I was surprised, 7 or 8 rather than 6. Just because I think Kansas, Duke, and maybe another school all lost this week. So I expected number 7. But I think the crazier part was how far they dropped Marquette after their loss to UConn on the road.
They got so destroyed.
They got absolutely run out of that building. Right. It was close maybe for the first 10 minutes of the game, and then UConn blew them out by halftime, essentially.
And right, and the difference between like Marquette and, to me, there's a clear, very clear top 3 in the nation. UConn, Houston, and Purdue, to me, are very, very clear top 3. And then everybody else, after that, there's a drop-off. And Marquette, of course, was on the wrong side of that drop-off. That's where they fell. Like, if Arizona would have suffered that loss, they don't fall as far because they're clearly above that. And, I mean, if you look at their record, the record reflects that Arizona's got 5 losses versus – or, sorry, if Purdue does that, excuse me. Purdue's only got 3 losses and Marquette's got 6. I mean, that's a huge difference.
Yeah.
In record. So.
Well, and I think it was the committee or the AP poll or the press thinks the same of Marquette all the way throughout the season. When Marquette was ranked number 1 and then they lost as the number 1 overall team, I believe they dropped 4 or 5 spots out of that number 1 ranking, which if you saw UConn lose a game, I believe UConn only loses 1, maybe 2 spots out of number 1, if they even move at all, because of how dominant they've really looked this year, both, you know, statistic wise as well as eye test wise. UConn, I agree with Mike. UConn, Houston, and Purdue are probably your 3 best teams for sure, putting themselves out ahead of the rest of the pack. We'll see, but there's a lot of good teams and a lot of stuff that can happen this year. That's why it feels like it could be another year where a number 1 seed loses, but we shall see what happens. But as we roll on towards March Madness time, as we alluded to, the Cyclones are now ranked number 6th in the AP poll after a good week again I believe our winning streak is at 4 games now. Ever since the heartbreak in Baylor, we've been able to rattle off some good wins. A solid road win over Cincinnati, and then defending home court against Texas Tech this week, which was on the docket. This is our first time ranked 6th or higher since 2015. And starting with the road win, it really helped out that Cincinnati was... Was it Cincinnati that was missing their big man, or
that's Texas Tech?
That was Texas Tech. But overall, Iowa State really came out hot, or solid, I guess I should say, against Cincinnati. They were able to force a lot of turnovers early, kind of set the tone, even though the offense wasn't clicking. And then there was a really good stretch for Iowa State that really kind of pushed that game a little bit to a comfortable lead by halftime. And then they were able to keep it up throughout the rest of the game. So, and then against Texas Tech,
it was, I'm sorry, back on that Cincinnati
back,
game.
Go back to Cincinnati, yeah.
It was, according to the metrics, it was our best defensive performance since the last Houston game, keeping them to 59 points, forcing 25 turnovers in that game was crazy. I mean, Cincinnati offensive rebounded the ball really well. They got to the foul line a fair amount. And they still lost by almost double digits on the home floor. And that's because we just forced turnovers. That this defense does. And forcing turnovers cures a lot of ills because a lot of them lead to fast breaks, too.
Well, so. And speaking of the turnovers, 25 turnovers for Cincinnati, only 19 made field goals. So I believe that was the maybe third or fourth time this season. I don't have that stat in front of me, in which Iowa State forced more turnovers than they allowed made field goals from an opponent. So not a good side of the statistic to be on if you are a opposing team for Iowa State. And again, just wreaking havoc, as there was a, I believe there was a technical foul assessed in this game, even though the box score doesn't show it. Cincinnati's head coach was... Or yeah. It might have been Houston.
Oh, no. Houston? No, Cincinnati's coach was not teed up. Texas Tech's coach was.
Yep. Gosh, I'm getting the two of them confused. Both red and black colored teams, and I can't keep my game straight. Sorry. But yeah, overall, we just did what we needed to do on the road, and clearly setting the tone was a big thing for this team. Didn't get to the free throw line much, but I know this is a stat Ariane loves to look at. 7 of 8 from the line was, you know, a good sign. 5 of 18 from 3, not that great. Shot less than 30% from the field, but we found other ways to get the ball in the basket, including a field goal percentage of 47.5 for the game. So that was a very good sign, as we were able to really get into the paint in this game, where over half of our points came against Cincinnati.
Overall, very good. I mean, you kept them at arm's reach most of the game. You never really felt like Cincinnati was going to go win that game, which is what you want. I mean, you just handled a good team, not a great team, but a good team on the road in the Big 12. It's hard to win on the road in the Big 12. And you just won, what, was that their third Big 12 road win? Second?
So we have TCU,
Texas, and Cincinnati.
Yeah. Yep.
So add that to the road win at DePaul, and you've already got 4 major conference road wins this year. Though DePaul sucks.
Oh, DePaul. I was just gonna say, I don't think we should mention that as a quality opponent, because they are not a good team this year.
DePaul is basically ranked 300th in most of these metrics. That's not good.
Yeah,
that's actually really bad.
Yeah, they're ranked lower than a lot of the mid-majors we played in the non-conference, and we played a lot of bad mid-majors in the non-conference too. Moving on to the Texas Tech game at home. With that one, really, again, it was a game where you kept them at arm's reach most of the game. Texas Tech did creep back into it at the end, made me a little bit nervous. But again, you held them to like 24, 25 points in the first half. You had a good lead. The lead was like 17 at times in the second half. You ended up beating them by 8. So overall, just another very, very solid performance by this team. Texas Tech's a good team. That's a quad one win, even though you were at home. You just took a good team and you manhandled them at home.
Yeah. The one thing that I want to point out is I think the turning point for this team this season was a bright spot coming out of an unfortunate event where we thought we could go the opposite direction. So late against BYU, Taman Lipsey gets hurt, right? Go to TCU without Taman Lipsey, and Curtis Jones has to step up. I just went through all the box scores. Since that TCU game, Curtis Jones has scored in double figures every single conference game of this season. He has been a bright spot off the bench, occasionally not able to shoot it well. But like I said in this Texas Tech game, Curtis Jones is the guy I want on the floor taking free throws outside of Trey King, like Mike said statistically. But game feel wise, I know he hasn't taken that many free throw attempts this season. But Curtis Jones is the guy I want on the floor late game scenarios, being able to handle the ball. He's consistent and he can make free throws at a very consistent pace, he's very consistent in that aspect. Keyshawn Gilbert gets to the line a lot, but isn't able to, or feels like he misses more often than Curtis Jones. Don't have the statistics in front of you right now.
He does.
But Curtis Jones is what I think we were now hoping he was going to be. Early on in the season, kind of felt a little bit forced, some of the shot selection that he is taking. But when he is able to get to the basket and see the ball go in the hoop a couple of times, that really helps his confidence level. And he is shooting much better from three as of late than he was at the beginning of the season. And he has become a true weapon off the bench for this team. And he's played some huge minutes in conference play recently, as Taman Lipsey has actually gotten into foul trouble in a few of these games as of late. And we really haven't seen a whole lot of drop off with him on the floor in place.
Yeah. And I mean, right, if we're using the Bartovic player rankings, right, just to sort of confirm your point, right, Lipsey and Momchilovic are rated as our two best players overall. But if you narrow that down to just conference play, it's Keyshawn Gilbert and Curtis Jones. And it's not close as our two best players in conference play. They have been huge. They've adjusted to the Big 12. They've adjusted to this environment, and they are playing really, really great basketball right now. It's the difference between being 9-3 in conference and being 5-4 in conference. Maybe, or 6 and math is hard. Somebody help me out. 6-6 in conference. There we go.
Add it up to 12, Mike.
Wow. 5-4 makes 9, not 12. Yeah, it's the difference between being 9-3 and being 6-6 right now, I honestly believe. So, huge to see.
What's our best lineup on the floor in a game?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to not say it's Gilbert, Jones, Lipsey, Jones, and Momchilovic, right?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. It's just you lose a lot down low without the presence of Trey King and that physicality.
Trey King is the one thing I was thinking about too.
You give that up when you put Momchilovic at the four. I think this is getting into next year. Truly, I think the best lineup for this Iowa State team can be Momchilovic at the four for this team going forward, and you play four out. Little bit more athleticism from your five in order
that'll
to do that.
Work on offense. I don't know if that'll work on defense.
Like, exactly. I mean, Momchilovic would need to put a little bit more weight on.
Yeah. Right. Like, if they have a big physical four, Momchilovic can't match up with them on defense.
Yeah.
That would be my concern.
Like, the team I know right off the bat where that wouldn't work against would be KU, probably, because KJ Adams is way too quick on his feet for Momchilovic to be able to guard him.
And he probably weighs about 50 more pounds.
Really? That's surprising.
He's a wide guy.
That is, on TV, he just looks so small, but that's comparing him next to Hunter Dickinson, who is
massive.
Large human.
Let's see. Momchilovic is 6'8 and 210. And KJ Adams is 6'7, 235. So an inch shorter, and 25 pounds heavier.
I guess that checks out, yeah.
He's got some weight to him for sure. I mean, just looking at our minutes played, our top five guys are Milan, Keyshawn, Taman Lipsey, Curtis Jones, and Trey King. That's our top five. And then Robert Jones comes in at six.
Yeah. But in
conference, I think that Robert Jones is one of the more important people on our team this year. I'm not exactly sure how it happened, but he just got good at basketball all of a sudden. I won't complain. I'm not going to question it too much, but he's been really good.
Especially against Texas Tech.
He scored eight straight?
I will say, for a point in time in that Texas Tech game, we were having trouble offensively just getting the ball in the basket, and we couldn't buy one. And Rob Jones was on fire. He didn't miss a shot for like the first 8 minutes of that game. You don't love seeing Rob Jones being a point forward at the end of the or in the second half, leading a fast break to Taman Lipsey, but it happened. And I will say, for what it's worth, I think Rob Jones had a tough stretch from the Baylor game through up until the Texas Tech game. But he seemed to kind of find that energy again and be really more efficient close to the basket. And I almost wonder if he was challenged to kind of get back there or spend a little bit more time, you know, in the gym after some of those games, because he really showed up for Texas Tech and was a pretty important piece early on in that game.
Yeah, for me, the biggest thing, like, way too many times in the past, Robert Jones was not just like not good. He was actively bad, like a detriment to the team, just like flipping up random hook shots and flopping the ball all over and fouling everybody all the time. So even when he's having like a bad stretch, like it's not as bad most of the time. Yeah. He has a positive assist to turnover ratio this year. He's not fouling all the time. He's picking his spots and his shots way better than he has in the past. And then when he has a good game, like it's really good. If Robert Jones is going to score 12 points in a game, we're probably going to win.
I think I noticed, though, with TJ Otzelberger? I think him or whoever is handling the rotation for the Cyclones is managing Rob Jones better this year. And I think that's in large part due to Hassan Ward being a viable second-line option, because what I noticed against Texas Tech is Rob Jones got a breather, I think, 3 minutes into the game. And what we saw from Rob Jones last year a lot of the time was, I think, physical tiredness. Him just being less conditioned than everybody else and being out there and then fouling, having these silly fouls just because he was tired and just trying to move his feet and stay with the defender. This year, I think they're managing his minutes a lot better, so that he's fresher throughout the game and he doesn't get into those areas where he gets a ticky-tack foul that takes him out of the game and loses rhythm, and he's able to stay in rhythm.
Which I find that interesting, because last year he was the backup center and this year he's the starting center. Like Oshun was the starting center last year. But if we look at minute share, if I switch back to all time instead of just conference here, last year, Rob Jones played 42% of our minutes last year. This year, he is playing 56%. So he's playing more this year still.
Yeah, he averaged 17 minutes a game last year, and he's averaging 22.6 minutes per game this year.
But part of that is I've never once been watching the game and screamed at the TV to get him off the floor, please.
Yes, which that was a constant last year, so... It's been awesome. I've been really excited about it. I don't really get it, but I'm definitely very happy about it.
Yep. Right. And I think this can help, right? Because we talked about this last week. They're going to need to look for a transfer big man.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I think you can say, look at Rob, right? If you've got like a fringe big man, you can say, look at Rob Jones. We just turned a bad big man into a good big man. Come here. We can help you.
I don't disagree with that statement at all. So, yeah, this team is exciting now. I think I am finally coming around to the fact that I was still on the fence a little bit about the quality and is this team going to be able to keep it together. But we are now most of the way through February, and this team is still playing at a ridiculously high level. And the toughest game is on deck next. And after that, the Cyclones do have a really easy schedule, and this team could very well be finished second or third in the Big 12, if not first, top three, which what were we picked to finish? Seventh or eighth?
Somewhere I believe. Around there.
So I think the job that TJ has done again, you know, goes without saying, but he's been phenomenal, and the way that they're implementing their defensive schemes against opponents night in and night out has been phenomenal. And yeah, I don't know how he couldn't be considered, you know, one of the coach of the year candidates this year. But I do feel like he's overlooked a lot in that aspect.
Yeah. People only look at Iowa State coaches if they want them to go somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Which we already saw TJ Otzelberger to Ohio State rumors, though those died down pretty quickly, I think. But
he doesn't have ties there, you know?
Yeah.
And honestly, I'm just going to throw this out there, a little off topic. Do you guys realistically think that the Ohio State job is a better job than the Iowa State job?
Not really.
That depends on what he wants, I guess.
Right. Like, it's not a for sure step up. It's on the same level, I would say. It's not a step down either by any means.
Probably there's more stress associated with it.
Yeah, I would say if you can perform at a good level consistently at Iowa State, everybody will just love you no matter what, and you won't get that everywhere.
Especially when you're an Iowa State alum too, right? Is that that going
for? And your wife played for Iowa State too.
So, but yeah, bringing it back to what you said about the standings, I mean, this team is already virtually guaranteed the double bye in the Big 12 tournament. Remember, with the 14-team tournament, you've got the double bye this year. So top four with the double bye, according to Bartovic, 99.7% chance to get that double bye, as well as having a 21% chance to win the conference outright and a 44% chance to at least share it. So crazy, crazy. But a lot of that comes down to tonight's game against Houston. If you win tonight's game against Houston, I think you win the conference, or at least get the number one seed in the Big 12 tournament, because you'll be a game up on Houston with the tiebreaker, and you'll have likely the easiest conference schedule of any of the contenders down the stretch. So win tonight and it's virtually yours. You don't lose it if you lose tonight, but you win tonight and I think you get the one seed in the Big 12 tournament.
And I don't know if we want to speak that into existence, but possibly one of the four number one seeds in the tournament.
I just don't see that happening. When you see how the committee ranked us on Saturday, right, as the number 11 overall, when I was thinking 8-9 was probably more where this team was going to be. And then, like I said, Connecticut, Purdue, and Houston are getting number one seeds, almost guaranteed at this point. So really that means only Arizona is catchable, and do you really see us catching Arizona? Personally, I don't.
But yeah, when you put it that way, probably not. You would need one of those teams to significantly slip up in order to make that a reality. Yeah.
This team,
but if you do beat Houston, if you beat Houston again in the regular season and Houston loses one of its remaining games, another one of its remaining games, and exits early out of the Big 12 tournament,
or you beat them again in the Big 12
or tournament. You beat them again, then that would be hard to deny them a number one seed or a higher seed than Houston.
Yeah. I think you can. This team probably maxes out at a two seed, and I think you can do that whether or not you win today, as long as you don't lose any of the games you're supposed to win coming down the stretch. So,
yeah.
But a one seed seems like a stretch to me. I don't think this team is getting a one. So you've got the Houston game this week, and then the second game this week is a home matchup, right? Home matchup against Oklahoma.
West Virginia.
Oh, it's the real easy one next. You've got to crush West Virginia 1 p.m. Saturday against you on ESPN2.
Going to say, that is a game you have to win. Every single statistic, minus 3-point field goals per game and free throw percentage per game, we are ahead of West Virginia in. That is a game you have to win. They're 8-17, 14th overall in the Big 12. They're probably going to be the last seed in the Big 12 tournament. That's a game you must win. But we all know we play really well at home, so.
Yeah, that's a game you're going to win.
Yeah. Anything else? I was just going to say, this game against Houston might be the biggest college basketball game of my Iowa State fandom that I've watched.
Regular season game.
Regular season, implication-wise, obviously. But yeah, I was trying to think back, is there another big one that was missing?
I mean, some of the matchups with KU in previous years, too, you could put up there. But
those are always big just because it's KU, and KU always was up there trying to win the Big 12, and your goal is to beat KU if you want to have a shot at winning the Big 12. Yeah.
So we'll see. We'll fill you in next week to see what the Cyclones' chances are. And at this time next week, there'll be 4 games left in the regular season. So we're barreling down on the conference tournament and Selection Sunday.
We'll have brackets in 3 weeks, right?
Four weeks, I think. Four weeks. 17th is Selection Sunday, March 17th. So we will, of course, keep you informed on all of that as we continue. But, Arian, it's the All-Star break in the NBA, and there was a game, if you want to call it a game.
Yeah, I guess you could call it that. I'll be honest, I really did not watch it because it is not entertaining. And I am as big an NBA fan as most people you will meet. But it just, I mean, it's not entertaining. Like, I put it on in the background for a second, just the All-Star game when I was doing something else. And I mean, you just see people just walking up and down the court. You can get better runs in a college gym than that. The final score was 211-186.
And it's not like either team like shot ridiculously well.
No, like, they both shot
55%, which is good, but it's not like it's phenomenal.
The East shot 97 threes and the West shot 71 threes.
That wasn't enough.
One of the West threes was Luka Doncic pulling up from three quarters court just because he could.
Just the level of effort has gotten absurd now. I understand that you're not going to go all out. You don't want to get injured. You're not going to try and clamp dudes up. But, I mean, at this point, it's the same issue that they had in the NFL. Like, they switched to flag football, and that felt better because it didn't feel as stupid to watch people just kind of flop around. But it's like, what do you do for basketball? Like, it's already really non-conference. I feel like you have to do something, though. It just keeps getting worse. And who wants the game? If nobody is enjoying watching it and the players don't really want to do it, what is the point of keeping the game around? Just to sell advertising spots, I guess?
Wasn't there an All-Star game like 2 years? Wasn't the NBA All-Star game like 2 years ago? They changed something and it was really, really good for 1 year.
Did they
unchange that?
They did for some reason. So they had switched to like a draft format and what was called the Elam ending. So like every quarter would start over with the score. And then they would add all those scores together and set a target score for you to get to. And it kind of made it a little more competitive. And it worked really well the first year because it coincided with the year that Kobe died in that helicopter crash. And they like, you know, honored him there. And like, it was all a big thing for Kobe. And the number was 24 and everybody tried really hard and it was super fun. And it didn't really work the same way last year. I don't know why they went back to the normal scoring for this year. I just saw that they did. But yeah, it just kind of sucked. At least it seems like it sucked as much as I gave it my attention.
I didn't watch it either.
I thought about watching it, and then I forgot it was on. But then I saw the clips on Twitter. It's like, Halliburton hits 5 threes right off the start. And I'm like, heck yeah, go him. And I go watch those clips, and I'm like, well, nobody tried. Who cares? Yeah,
people are just standing around.
He's pulling up from the logo.
It's not even a contest.
So
Arian, is there a way to make this better? So national sports media today was saying there has to be an incentive, and everybody's saying the only All-Star game that really matters anymore is the MLB All-Star game because winner gets home field advantage.
They don't anymore. They got rid of that a couple of years
ago. I know, which they got rid of. Do they need to do that in the NBA?
No, I don't like that. I feel like you should be rewarded for what your team did, not some random collection of people. Like, I don't know. That's a weird thing to me. I don't like it. In my opinion, the whole situation, the whole event needs to change. and probably just needs to not be a full basketball game. You need to change the format. You need to make it something more casual, because this is a casual event and a casual weekend. The players don't want to play a whole nother game. They're trying to have a vacation. In my opinion, the All-Star game just needs to cease to exist or exist in a different way, because I don't see how you make these guys desperately want to play defense. It won't happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think I saw this right. You can correct me if I'm wrong. The Rising Stars game, they got a $25,000 incentive. But for the Rising Stars, that's,
yeah, that's, you know, good money.
Good money. But for Nikola Jokic, LeBron James, Kevin Durant, $25,000 is like them being handed $10. Yeah. It really doesn't matter. So I don't think incentive-based really does anything. I don't know what to say. I don't know if there is a way to change it. But I saw a comic where somebody said that the NFL should do a scrimmage basketball game, and then the NBA should do a scrimmage football game, like a flag football game.
You know, that sounds a lot more fun.
So maybe that's it. I don't know.
You know, they have all the stupid stuff during the Pro Bowl, like table tennis or snapping competitions. I don't know. Make it more fun. Like, it doesn't have to be just straight basketball. Have some skills competitions. Have other stuff that people like to do. They did a horse competition during COVID. Bring that back. That seems fun.
I know Nikola Jokic would be a huge fan of that.
I think Mike Conley won it when they did it.
Who just signed a 2-year extension with the Wolves.
I know. I was like, isn't he 40 already? That's crazy. He signed a 2-year extension. But yeah, I think they just need to rethink the whole thing. And then as far as dunk competition goes, I don't know. Yeah, like, we had Benjamin Toppin in it this year. I didn't even know that was a guy. I didn't know Obi Toppin had a brother.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know. To me, it kind of makes sense. Maybe you narrow the list of people down to people who are there already. If you are not a Rising Star or an All-Star, maybe you don't get to be in the dunk competition or the three-point competition, and we actually have real names there who are going to do it. I mean, LeBron James has never been in a dunk competition. Like, that sucks. People would have liked to see that, but he didn't want to get embarrassed and he didn't want to lose. And I see people float ideas about do a one-on-one competition or a two-on-two competition, and you'll have the same issue.
Yeah, that's not going to work. People aren't going to want to play hard and hurt themselves either.
Yeah. And you just know that, like, LeBron's not going to want to end up losing to, like, Jaylen Brown or somebody, or, you know, somebody that is not as good as him, and then he'll have to hear about it forever. And I don't know. I don't think there's an easy answer, but I know that from what I saw, nobody seemed to enjoy it.
And I think it all culminated in my opinion, Tyrese Haliburton getting an absolute snub for MVP. The game already was not exciting to watch, and for someone who is more efficient and the hometown kid technically in this game, got snubbed for Damian Lillard, who shot like 68 shots or something in this game.
26.
Well, 26 threes.
23 threes, 26 shots.
Oh,
if he shot 68 shots, that'd be crazy.
His arms would fall off.
It'd be like Kobe's 70-point game, right? Yeah,
his retirement.
The East only shot 146, so.
That's it.
Only.
The person who shot the most in this game was Karl Anthony Towns, who went 23 of 35 for 50 points. So, I mean, if you want to make an argument for somebody, I think Karl Anthony Towns has a reasonable
But
they lost. Exactly. Big time.
And he scored 186 points and lost.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, Damian Lillard was less efficient. Damian Lillard also was just taking shots from half court. I mean, he only took three shots that weren't threes. And just from when I, like, peered at the TV, Tyrese got at least three or four of those baskets in the last, like, 3 minutes. They were feeding him like crazy at the end of the fourth, and nobody was stopping him, obviously. So, I mean, yeah, he was pretty efficient. I don't know that it's a drastic snub. I agree that I thought they were trying to feed him those points so that he could win it at home. But I'm sure he probably doesn't care that much. I was just excited that he was there, you know, doing well. I like to see Cyclones killing it in the NBA. So happy that he had a good showing either way.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts on NBA All-Star weekend. I think, what, Damian Lillard won the three-point competition, I think.
It was a three-point competition.
Yeah. Matt McClung went back-to-back on dunk competitions.
There was also a Steph Curry,
Sabrina Ionescu.
Three-point competition, just the two of them. Sabrina did have more makes against Steph than Dame did to win it, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, she did well. She shot from the NBA line instead of the WNBA line as well. So
yeah.
From what I was reading online, it seemed like most people thought that was the most exciting part of the weekend. So I don't know if that means that the weekend was really boring or that was just a really good event. But we'll see.
I think it was definitely an interesting event. It was the most unique event I think
it was a little new
in a long time. So props to them for that, I guess. But
yeah. Oh, and one thing that we did not mention that we should, this whole weekend, if you have not looked it up, go ahead and do that, was played on an LED court. I'm not exactly sure how that works. If it's underneath something, I was wondering how that wouldn't be super slippery. But the whole court was like changing and lit up and would like do graphics and stuff, which in my opinion was horrible to look at. But I thought some people seemed to like it. I was just immediately like, imagine how many ads they would fit on that if this was a regular season game. Like, yeah, I don't want to see it.
Well, and the thing that I thought about that too, for the players' sake, that thing had to be bright.
Right? That has to be so distracting.
Like, you think about it, how
it didn't seem to affect their shooting percentage.
Yeah, which is odd, because I kind of thought it would.
Very true. But yeah, I would have thought that would have been super bright. Sunglasses required, but yeah. I guess not.
Oh, there were also 5 free throws taken in this game, so that's fun.
Fouls called?
Apparently. Giannis took 2, Tyrese Maxey took 2, and Paul George took 1.
Giannis taking free throws, that probably extended the game by 20 minutes.
Yeah. It was taken long enough with 146 shots and 143 shots, just 289 shots combined. Just ridiculous. Yeah. If it's going to be like that, I don't know, can we just do a half a game so that the scores look normal at least? Why are we playing a full game? Nobody wants to do that.
I saw a graphic where someone took a picture, I think, when Michael Jordan was playing in an All-Star game, and the final of that game was 111 to like 105, and I think the score at halftime was 104 to 90 something. Oh. So they were already there at halftime of the All-Star game. Yeah. Oh well, not a lot you can say to fix that. Exciting second half of the NBA season coming up. You informed on what is going on there, Mike. I am very excited personally about this one because I didn't know what it was. And so I really wanted you to learn me up here in this segment of Mike's Stupid Rules. Cross-checking. Give it to me.
So the reason this came up, I'll give you the background. So Kyle, you were watching the Cyclones game against Cincinnati, I think.
Yes.
And you saw that.
It was right before tip-off. There was an alert came through on ESPN that some guy,
Morgan Riley
got a 5-game suspension for cross-checking. And I was like, I have no clue what that means. Mike, this is our Mike's Stupid Rules this week.
Yeah. So I'll do two separate things. I'll explain cross-checking and then I'll explain that play and why it was suspension worth. So first of all, you know what a hockey stick is, yes? I know, yes. I got to start at the basics with you guys with hockey.
Yes. I do know what a hockey stick is.
Do you know what
piece of wood?
Do you know what checking is? Actually, most of them are made of wood these days, but
with your body, right?
Yes. Yeah. That is correct. So what cross-checking is, right, at a high level, is when you take your stick and you use the shaft of your stick and you hold like the two ends of your stick and you check somebody with the shaft of your stick, essentially. Does that make sense?
Like with the flat side or like you're jabbing them?
With the flat side. So you're okay. Essentially like you've sort of like the flat side. It's sort of like if you grab the two sides of a 2x4 and knocked somebody with
it. Just push
except
them
with the it. Hockey stick. Yeah. Yeah. So the official definition of cross-checking, according to Section 8, Rule 59.1 of the NHL rulebook, is that cross-checking is the action of using the shaft of the stick between the two hands to forcefully check an opponent. So that's the definition. It's going to be a you can get a minor penalty or a major penalty, depending on the severity of said check. And you could also get a even a match penalty, a game misconduct, or even fines and suspensions. If deemed appropriate, supplementary discipline can be applied by the commissioner's office. And that's what happened in this case. And I didn't see the play when Kyle asked, so I went back and looked at it today. And this one was absolutely, totally warranting a suspension. So to set this up, you've got the Ottawa Senators are up 4-3 with 15 seconds left in the third period. Toronto's got an empty net. And Senators forward Ridly Gehrig gets a breakaway and puts the puck in the empty net. So it's going to be 5-3. There's 6 seconds left in the game. And Morgan Riley just skates up to him as he's celebrating by the boards and absolutely just cross-checks him in the back of the head. Like, so it's a, first of all, it's a dangerous play because it was a cross-check to the head. Second of all, it was in a dead puck situation. Like, the play wasn't even live. You can't make any sense that he was trying to make a play on the puck because it was obviously a dead puck situation. It was just totally unnecessary, like blindsided and then just a cross check to the side of the face. Like, he would have gotten suspended for that even if it wasn't specifically a cross check, just because that's just unacceptable, an unacceptable amount of roughness in that situation. So you can't hit, so even in hockey, a sport where you're allowed to hit people, you can't hit somebody like that.
Yeah, that is so fair.
Now, cross-checking is interesting because of the way the rule is worded, right? How I said specifically, it says in the rules about forcefully check an opponent. There's a lot of cross-checks, especially when two players are battling out in front of the net. Defenders get away with a lot of cross-checks in the NHL that don't get called because there's some subjectivity to it, and a lot of officials will let them play in some of those situations, especially in front of the net. Most cross-checks against the boards are going to get called because they're fairly egregious and obvious, but theoretically it can be a cross-check, right? It doesn't have to be up against the boards to be a cross-check by that rule, but you get away with a lot of them if you're not up against the boards, especially if you're battling in front of the net. Personally, I think they need to call cross-checking more aggressively because imagine getting 2x4'd in the ribs repeatedly, right? Even with padding, that's going to take a toll and that's going to get people hurt.
Yeah.
Right. I think they need to cross-checking more aggressively, but the league obviously doesn't because it's not a new thing. So
fair enough.
Did that answer all of your questions?
Yes, it did.
Is 5 games what you would kind of expect for this normally?
Yeah, 5 games is a long suspension in the NHL. I mean, right, 82-game season, so that's 8% of the season, something like that, quick math. But considering how egregious it was, and I don't know Morgan Riley's history, so I can't say for sure whether he's got a history of doing things like this, but this was just terribly egregious. Like, you can't do that. Like, if you got a problem with him, you can fight him. Like, just go fight him at the next puck drop. Like, and then nobody would get suspended. So, yeah.
Which is a weird, weird thing. Like, you can't push him. Just go and punch his face.
Yeah. But then it's mutual, right?
Yeah, it's just a funny thing to think about.
That's the thing. You blindsided a defenseless player in a dead puck situation. Like, yeah. A suspension is definitely warranted. The history is what I'd have to look at to say if 5 games is right. But it's certainly not outrageous if you go watch the video. So I'll post the link in Discord if you guys want to go watch the video. But it's pretty bad.
Nice.
Any other questions about that rule, Kyle? Did I answer you? Did I satisfy your curiosity?
Yeah, you got it. Thanks for that. So, well, with that and Mike being able to educate me a little bit more on some rules of hockey, we now, much like the NHL, had to hold Riley accountable, we have to hold ourselves accountable. Mike, what is coming off the board this week?
The only things coming off the board this week are a couple predictions from Ariane. He first predicted that the men's and women's basketball teams would both get to 20 regular season wins. The men have done so. They are at 20-5 right now. But the women are sitting, what are they? Did I say they're 14-9, I think, with four games to play. So that is not going to be possible for them to get to 20 wins. They're 14-10. Either way, not possible for them to get to 20 wins. So,
nah.
And you also predicted, Arian, on the other side, that both men's and women's teams would have losing conference records. The men are already at 9-3, so the worst they can be is 9-9, which is not a losing record. So for that, you get a
nah.
The women still could have a losing record. They're 8-6. Hopefully they end with a winning record, but you never know. We'll see. But that's it for our accountability session. Ion, you want to try to redeem yourself and get something back up on the board?
Yeah, I'm really proud of my ability to just completely shoot the gap and be wrong in both ways. So that's cool for me. But not learning my lesson of basing one prediction off of two different things, I'm going to just do that again. And I will predict that Kirk Cousins and Baker Mayfield will both re-sign with their respective teams. So Kirk Cousins and Baker Mayfield will be back with the Vikings and the Buccaneers next season.
I mean, I guess I don't have any odds pulled up on this, but just as a feel, both players would probably be served well to remain at both of their respective teams. I think both of their situations are pretty decent in those, like, in their own respective, you know, teams and areas and divisions and what they have around them. So
yeah, I think the teams benefit as well for keeping both of them.
But for both of them,
yeah, I can't find anything for his odds for the next team.
I'm gonna say a double.
I think their respective teams are the most likely outcome for both of them. But saying they're both going to get there, double, triple, probably double, Wyatt.
Yeah. And it's not like we're saying they'll be there at the end of next season either, right? We're saying they're essentially just going to re-sign.
Correct. I don't think either of them get traded either, though.
I agree. Seems unlikely, but it's one less thing to happen. I think that keeps it in double territory. I don't think that really bumps it up into a triple.
Sounds like double.
Double it is.
For my prediction, I am going to go to the world of baseball. Spring training is fully underway for all major league teams. We are a little over a month away from opening day, and I am going to predict that the Twins are going to win the AL Central again this year.
Let's go to FanDuel. Not I've a heard sponsor. That that's a
really good division this year, so it'll be a tough one.
Twins are the odds-on favorite at minus 140, with the Tigers in second at plus 350, Guardians at plus 400, Royals, and White Sox are both long odds at plus 1,000 and plus 3,800.
Tigers at better odds than the Guardians? Wow.
Correct.
That's shocking.
At least FanDuel does.
Seeing a lot of people, you know, jump on the hot take wagon, though, of, you know, the Royals might win it. They look great.
Well,
so they're trying to get ahead of it.
They spent a lot of money.
They did.
For being the Royals. DraftKings has much different odds. Well, not really. Twins at minus 115, Tigers and Guardians both at plus 350, and then the Royals at plus 850 with the White Sox at plus 4,000.
Wow.
This seems like a single.
That feels better.
You can't say a single for winning a division.
Odds on favorite.
Odds on favorite?
Not by much.
Not by much?
That's not a ton. I would not give this a single.
For perspective's sake, the National League East, which is probably the Braves to lose, the Braves are minus 240 and the Phillies are plus 300. So we're almost in the same odds here for the Twins versus the Tigers, /Guardians.
Oh, it's fair.
FanGraphs gives the Twins a 54% chance to win the division, if that helps influence anybody at all.
Arian, are you saying single?
Yeah.
I'm saying single. Doesn't matter why it's overruled.
To be fair, I didn't say not single. I just said probably.
You
not
just
single.
Said,
and it's irrelevant anyway, just like you said. Single it is. Do we have anything from Josh this week? Is he still alive?
We do. He is looking ahead to the second half of the NBA season as well, looking for the Bucks to sort of pick it up as they've been struggling a little bit recently. He's going to say that Giannis Antetokounmpo will average over 35 points over the next three games.
The question would be, who do they play?
That is a great question. I should have looked it up, but I didn't.
I'm pulling it up. Their next three games are at the Thunder, versus the Magic, and versus the Celtics. Celtics are one of the better defensive teams in the league. The Thunder might be number two in the West right now, one in the West. I mean, two of those teams are for sure playoff teams.
I'm looking at a very different schedule than you.
Oh, no, maybe I looked at the wrong thing.
I was going to say, so this season he's
sure
averaging.
Enough. At Minnesota, at Philadelphia versus Charlotte, is that what you see?
That's what I'm seeing.
That's what I was looking at.
Okay, so I'm going to say the same thing. At Minnesota, one of the best defensive teams in the league.
Yep.
At Philadelphia, they are a playoff team. However, they don't have Joel Embiid right now, yep. So they will be a little weak in the front court. And Charlotte's just a giant garbage pile, so... He only averages 31 on the season right now.
31 on the season, and his last 10, he's averaging 29.7 on the season. And versus Minnesota in one game, he had 17 points.
Yeah. I'm going to say triple.
Good with that.
I don't think it can happen, but it could for sure.
I'm good with that.
Let's do it. I will predict that Kelvin Sampson, head coach for Houston, will get a technical foul against Iowa State in the game tonight.
If it was at Hilton, I'd probably give it to you. But
will it be Baylor 2.0?
Yeah, Scott Drew ejected at home. I just don't see Kelvin Sampson getting teed up unless his team's playing really bad and he's trying to send a message. I'm willing to say triple on this.
It's at home. I'm honestly willing to say home run.
Now it's on me. I mean, when you really look at it, how often does it happen? It's probably pretty close to a home run. I'll just go ahead and say home run.
I just tried to look it up and I couldn't find anything quickly on how many times he's been teed up.
It has been odd how many coaches have been teed against us this year.
I know it's odd. I know for a fact I've witnessed him be teed up three times.
Kelvin Sampson?
Yes. And two of them were in the same game where he got ejected. So.
Yeah, so home run?
I'm saying a home run.
I will take it.
I am going to make two predictions this week because why not quantity over quality? Iowa State will make the Big 12 championship game in Kansas City.
Basically, you're going to win two games, one against one of the middle tier teams and one against one of the top tier teams is what that's predicting.
Correct.
Double, triple.
What's our general percentage cutoff for triple?
It's more of a vibe check, not a hard number.
Yeah, but I feel like we have general ideas.
12%, sub 10%.
Yeah, somewhere in generally like 10 to 25-ish.
Yeah,
I'm 10 to 20-ish.
I want to say double, but it feels really on the edge of a triple to me as well. I'm going to say double.
Fine.
The Big 12 tournament is our jam as a school.
It is.
The only school that's won more of them than us is Kansas.
Double it is.
Both de facto home teams. And then, Wyatt, this one's for you. Christian Horner will remain Red Bull team principal for the entirety of the 2024 season. And for all of you, especially Mike, where precision is key, I'm giving you exact precision from the start of race one to the checkered flag of the final race.
The biggest problem with this prediction, as I digest it, is there is some kerfuffle happening at Red Bull right now. Correct me if I'm wrong, Kyle. It's somewhere along lines of a current or maybe a former employee of Red Bull, like the racing segment of Red Bull, is like alleging that Horner was it. Inappropriate text messages?
Workplace misconduct. We'll so just like, say that.
There's like an internal independent investigation. I think he's came out saying that he is very confident he will still be the leader because he's built the team to the point that it is now, right? But if these allegations have credibility, what's going to happen? And that's what I don't know, and that's why I'm very, very wishy-washy. And obviously, if this wasn't a thing, this would be not even allowed on the board because it would be too obvious.
Correct. And so I will say this. There has been a report that has come out now that Red Bull did offer Horner to voluntarily step down on his own. And the report would say that he is stepping down from his responsibilities due to medical issues, and he declined to take that at the end of last season.
Ah, that I did not know. That makes it seem a little bit less likely to happen.
You're saying it's less likely because he figured he would still make it through based on the quote-unquote evidence that they do have?
Yeah, I think he's still trying to... not bully himself into, he's being very bullish, not bullyish, bullish in his stance. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing for him. It very much depends on what's being alleged and you know, what evidence out there. Either way, I feel like this is more of a triple. Originally, I was thinking maybe a double.
That's what I wanted.
But so, I feel like this is a triple.
Glad to hear it. That's all I got.
All right, with a single, two doubles, two triples, and a home run, that concludes our Write That Down prediction segment, which means we're at the end of the episode. Thank y'all so much for dropping by this week's episode of the 8311 Cast, episode 259. From now until next week's episode, be sure to check with the socials at 8311 Cast, wherever you find us. Signing off for the 8311 Cast, we have your hosts,
Kyle Mersch,
Mike Ludwig,
Ariane Berry,
and Wyatt Teeter. We'll talk to y'all again next week. Go Cyclones!
Go Cyclones!
Go Cyclones!
Go Cyclones!